The church is 361 years old, and yet if you look around you, you can see it's contemporary and it's pioneering. This new facility completed 18 months ago, the new church plant central into Belfast. And so this is a church that is old and new. I love this church because it is truly a local parish church, and yet it really has a national influence and voice. I love it because it is rooted in the scriptures, and yet it is empowered by the Holy Spirit and engaged in social transformation with CAP and Food Bank and Manor and all the rest of it. And I love the fact that whilst this is a big, busy church, you are passionately committed to prayer. And until fairly recently, had a prayer house. Now you've got a prayer room in this new facility. And obviously tomorrow, the day of prayer. And it's really exciting for me because Ben Connolly, we haven't actually met, have we? Should we have a hug? Like, we did a book together. We've never met before. So it's a moment. Ben. Here's what happened. I wanted someone to illustrate Dirty Glory, and I put a thing out on social media, like, does anyone fancy having a go at this? And I had all sorts of replies, some really good, some less good offers. And then Ben's came through, and I clicked on it. I saw he had designed a poster for Glenn Hansard. Yeah. And I thought, okay, this is pretty promising. And I thought, wow, this guy's amazing. And he said he would illustrate the book. And then he said he was from this place, Khan Money. And I thought, oh, that sounds familiar. And then he said his wife was involved with a house of prayer. And I thought, that sounds familiar. And then he said to me, you know, this is just like God. I said, isn't it just? He said, no, you don't understand. It's just like God. I wouldn't normally read a boring book about prayer, but I'm going to have to now. It's God's way of making me do it. So it's nice to finally meet. Thank you for your brilliant illustrations. Theme really for Catalyst this year, we're going to be exploring together one particular bit of the Bible that I think that this church is focusing on even throughout the year, Exodus 33. And so I know some of you will only be here tonight, some of you will be able to make Sunday morning and Sunday evening as well. But the three parts will fit together, so if you can only make one, just listen to the other downloads. But tonight we're going to look at verses 1 to 6 of Exodus 33, and we're going to think about change. Then on Sunday morning we're going to think about verses 7 to 11, which is about the priority of prayer. And Sunday evening we're going to think about the joy of the journey, which is verses 12 to 18. So I think I've got the words coming up on the screen, Exodus 33, 1 to 6. Amazing. That's just to stop you pretending to read it on your phones and playing Angry Birds instead. If you do that, you go to hell. So, and if Carl Martin told that joke when he was here, it's my joke, he's stolen it, and I've heard he does it all around the world now, and everyone says that's Carl's joke. It's my joke. So Exodus 33, verses 1 to 6. If you're able to, let's stand for the reading of God's words as a sign of respect, please. Then the Lord said to Moses, leave this place, you and the people that you brought up out of Egypt, and go up to the land that I promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. I will send an angel before you. I'll drive out the Canaanites, Amorites, Hittites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. Go up to the land flowing with milk and honey, but I will not go with you. Well, we don't always realize there are some bits of the Bible that are quite surprising. God is saying to the people of God, you're going to become the people of. I'm not going with you. You're on your own. If any of you want to freak out a friend, you could send them this particular scripture just as a reference. I guarantee they'll reply saying, thank you, that was so helpful, because no one ever looks them up. God, You don't see this on Instagram feeds with like sunsets. God says you're on your own. So I will not go with you because you are a stiff-necked people and I might destroy you on the way. When the people heard these distressing words, they began to mourn and no one put on any ornaments. For the Lord had said to Moses, tell the Israelites you're a stiff-necked people. If I were to go with you even for a moment, I might destroy you. Now take off your ornaments and I will decide what to do. So the Israelites stripped off their ornaments at Mount Horeb. Okay, do be seated. We will get our heads around the ornaments in just a moment, don't worry. But first of all, let's just think about the context. This is a moment of massive transition for the people of God. This is the moment they've been waiting for, not just for years, but for generations. The promise to their father, their grandfather, as it were, is about to materialize. They're about to step into the promised land. And it is going to signal change in every way you can imagine. It's going to be a geographical change. They're moving from the wilderness across the Jordan into the promised land. It's a geographical change. It's like moving to a new city or a new country. But it's also political change because Moses' leadership is going to cede to Joshua's leadership. And Moses was a bit more of a kind of mystic who liked to go up mountains and commune with God. And Joshua was a bit more of a kind of warrior leader. It's a different style. You do know in different seasons, God raises up different types of leaders. The worst thing you can do is try and always, find a leader who's exactly like the last one because time moves on and the needs of communities change. So it's a political shift as well as a geographical shift that is about to happen. It's also an economic shift because up till now they have been nomads wandering in the promised land, in the wilderness, and God has supernaturally fed them with manna, with bread from heaven every day. Pretty easy. And they are about to have to become an agrarian society. They're going to have to learn how to farm and work the land and all that boring waiting. It's not just, here's the food for today, you sow, and then you wait and you wait, and eventually you reap. And so this is an economic shift. It's a cultural shift. It's a political shift. It's a geographical shift. And it's also a spiritual shift that's about to happen. Because up till now, God's guidance has also been pretty easy. Pillar of cloud, pillar of fire. Lovely. That would do me. I'd love that. It'd be so easy, wouldn't it? If God would just make it, okay, God's on the move. Off we go. God stopped. Let's stop. So easy. Short of a glowing neon sign, he couldn't have made it much easier for them to know what to do. And that's all about to just stop. And they're about to enter a season where God's going to speak to them in ways that are a little more oblique through prophets and, through his word and through inward impression. And they're not going to have the cloud and the fire anymore. They're going to miss it. Do you know when you transition from one season of your life to the next, God will often change the way he speaks to you. I meet people who say, God's not speaking to me anymore, but it's sometimes because God is speaking to them in a different language or a different way to what they've become accustomed to. People don't say, I know how God speaks. Well, you know how God speaks in this season, but when you go through your next major life change, you'll probably find that God begins to reveal himself to you in new ways. It's one of the ways that he matures and develops and stretches us. And so this is about to be a major theological change. Maybe you're here tonight in the midst of a paradigm shift theologically. God is opening you to new ways of understanding him, new revelations of who he is. Maybe you're here tonight on the edge of a geographical move. You're about to move geographically. Maybe a professional move. Maybe at work you're looking at a new role or a new job somewhere else or a promotion. Maybe you're preparing to get married. Maybe you're about to have kids. Who knows that that's the really, everyone thinks getting married's the big shift. Who knows that when the kids turn up, that's the real shift, right? And or maybe your kids are about to leave home, big change. Maybe you're preparing to retire. I don't know what transition looks like for you. Maybe you've decided to come here because you're aware that this is a significant time for you. Now, this is very important. It's one of the most important things I'm going to say tonight. The decisions that we make at times of transition are disproportionately important. People tend to think that just kind of the choices we make are important, equally important every day. They're wrong. There are times in your life when the choices you make will set the trajectory for years to come. And so when we are in seasons of transition, we must pay attention to the choices that we make because they will have long-term implications. And the trouble is that when we're in seasons of transition, they can often be seasons of turmoil because everything's changing. The way God's speaking is changing. The geography is changing. The politics is changing. The theology, everything's changing. And so in those moments, we can kind of try and cling on to the past. And we often don't make good decisions for the future. The decisions you make at times of transition are disproportionately important. And God obviously knows that. And so he doesn't just show up to Moses and go, okay, off you go, into the promised land. He puts Moses through a test. And it's a pretty major one. He says, off you go into the promised land, but I'm not coming with you. Because you're stiff-necked people. That's because they've just kind of recently in the previous chapter done the whole golden calf thing. So he's like, you're on your own. And as we read on, we find out that Moses basically says to God, no deal. No deal. If your presence doesn't go with us, don't send us up from here. If we get the promised land, but we lose the promised giver, we lose everything when we gain everything, right? No deal. Good answer. The most important decision that you can make when you're in a time of transition is to choose the presence of God. That's what's being tested here. Whatever transition looks like for you here this evening, this is a disproportionately important time for you to prioritize the presence of God. When I just finished writing Red Moon Rising, I was really tired because I've never learned to type. I can't remember how many books I've written, but they've all been with those two puppies there. And I only really use that for caps locks, so it's basically that one. And if only I'd learned to touch type. Like when I was growing up, like typing was a thing that just some people did. Does anyone remember that? Like some, it wasn't like universal. It was like some. So I didn't really learn how to type because my vision for my life wasn't to become a secretary, you know? And then I found out it's like the most useful thing on planet Earth. And so I've typed these books with these two fingers. I'm really fast. It's like a woodpecker on drugs. And I'd been staring at this screen like right for, you know, days and weeks and months. My eyes were dried out. I'd hardly seen my wife and kids. And eventually I reached the moment I'd finished. And I called Sammy and the boys in to the study where I was working. And the boys were quite little at the time, so I sat one on each knee. We said a little prayer, and we put our hands on the mouse, and we sent it off to the publisher. It was like this big moment. And then I'd been fantasizing about this moment. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. There was a pub near our house at the time that had two essential things. It had a big leather couch. And I was so tired, I just wanted to like just stop and collapse into the embrace of this leather sofa. And there was a play area for the kids. So we headed straight off over there, and we got there, and I collapsed into the leather sofa, and I said to the boys, pointing out the window, "Behold, the Lord hath provided." the swings and verily the slides. Go forth, enjoy, take as long as you want. And so they went running towards the door with excitement, and one of them went straight through the door, and I saw him out the window running towards the swings and the slides. But the other one got to the door and he stopped and he watched his brother going, and then he turned around and he looked back at me, and then he looked at his brother. And then he came slowly back towards me. And I thought he was going to, you know, ask to go to the toilet or something. And he looked up at me and he said some words that just sucked the air out of the room. He said, "Dad, I missed you. I missed you." And he climbed into my arms and he put his podgy little arms around my neck. And he just sat there breathing in rhythm with me. And all the while, I'm watching his brother on the swings and slides outside. Now listen, in that moment, he didn't become more my son than the other one. And I didn't love him more than the other one, but you have no idea how much his act of unnecessary affection ministered to my tired father's heart. When you choose the presence of God, when you prioritize God in prayer, maybe at 3 a.m, going to a prayer room somewhere, you don't become more God's kid. He doesn't love you more than all the sensible people who are asleep at home. But you have no idea how you minister to the heart of the Father when you choose him in a world that continually ignores, rejects, or despises him to this day. And so the invitation we have at times of transition is to choose the Father, to prioritize the presence of God. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. All this stuff will get given to you. Delight yourself in the Lord. He'll give you the desires of your heart. You can have the promised land, but you're not having me. No deal. Do not send us forth from this place unless you come with us. And so if I look you in the eyes tonight and say, okay, if you were in that situation, what would you do? The bit of the sort of Sunday school person in many of us would go, I would choose Jesus. You know, like, you know that thing at Sunday school? Like the Sunday school teacher says, now, I'm thinking of an animal. It's gray and fluffy with a big tail. Who knows what it is, you know? And there's just silence. And eventually one kid puts his hand up and goes, I know the answer's Jesus, but it really sounds like a squirrel, you know? You know, there's a part of us always wants to say the right thing. I would choose Jesus, not the promised land, you know? Really? Let's play this out. You go to bed tonight, you wake up tomorrow morning, and every prayer you ever prayed is answered. Like, the mail comes, and you open an envelope, and you find you've inherited, let's say, I don't know, how much do you want? 3 million? That's enough? Okay. 3 million. You've inherited John's enough. Anyone want more than 3 million? No? Pretty much everyone here is happy with 3 million. Okay, that's good. You've inherited 3 million from an unknown aunt in Bolivia, right, who's died. So that, you know, that's a good moment for you. And then you, just as you're trying to get your head around that, your phone goes and it's that person who doesn't know Jesus you've been praying for, maybe for years, and they say, the weirdest thing happened last night. And like an angel appeared to me, and I've realized it's all true, and I've given my life to Jesus. What do I do now? And you're like, okay, let's have coffee. This is good morning, you know? And then that person you've been praying for who's sick texts you and says, I've been healed. You're like, this is going, this is a good day. This is shaping up. Every prayer, everything that you've been, the stronghold that you're wrestling with in yourself, it's just like the power of it's just broken. All those prayers, all those heart cries, That's what we're talking about here, the promised land, everything they've prayed for and longed for and dreamed for. And God says, it's yours. And he goes, but you're going to get it without me. If you're in that situation, God says, I'll do all that for you, the £3 million check and the salvations and the healings and the strongholds broken and whatever else it is, the promotion at work, but you're never going to experience me again the way you do right now. What do you say? Or conversely, you might have to live with unanswered prayer and disappointment for the rest of your life, but you will know the presence of God. What do you say? And the truth is, we probably do say, God, we choose you, but let's be honest and stop kidding each other that this is an easier choice as we sometimes make out. We always pray, don't we, for God to airlift us out of our problems, as we call them miracles. And more often, he parachutes in and joins us in the middle of them. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Why? Not because you make it go away, but because thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. You understand, it's the presence of God with you in the pain, with you in the disappointment, with you in the struggle and the questions. Many of you will know, and Michael was kind enough to mention God on mute. Part of our story was, you know, like we started a prayer room. It went crazy, miracles, healings, just atheists coming to the prayer room and, you know, experiencing the presence of God. And then God sneezed and this virus began to spread and we couldn't believe it. And suddenly we were in countries we didn't know existed. And then we haven't stopped. You know, 18 years later, we're still going strong. And it's been a wild ride with 24/7. On our 15th birthday party, it was in St. Stephen's Cathedral in Vienna, and we were photobombed by the Pope and the Archbishop of Canterbury, you know? I mean, it was insane, and you're sitting there going, how did this happen? And it was just, we chose the presence of God. We pushed into prayer. We prioritized the presence of God. And so it's been a wild ride. And probably about a year into this, maybe a year and a half, I think we felt like our prayers could save the world. If only everyone would just do exactly what we're doing, revival will come. Some big fat red switch will get flicked in heaven. And then for me personally, my wife got incredibly sick and very nearly died repeatedly, numbers of times. We had two very small children at that stage. And she's alive. She's still not fully healthy, but she's alive, and she's way, 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 way better than they ever thought she could be. But, you know, suddenly I found, like, I used to think my prayers could save the world, and now I don't know if my prayers can save my own wife. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow, thou art with me. And we did experience the presence of God in the midst of the disappointment and the fear and the frustration and the questions and the doubt. I don't understand. Why do you do that thing, God, and not that thing? I don't know. But we did experience the presence of God. And for us, the valley of the shadow of death is the MRI scanner. Many of you have been in those tubes. Some people just go in for, you know, like a soft tissue scan or whatever. But when my wife was lying in there, they were scanning her really to find out if she was going to live or die. She was so scared the first time she had to spend half an hour in there, she vomited inside this multi-million pound machine. Like, you know, that's the valley of the shadow. You can't even take your wedding ring in. You're just alone. And so she memorized a particular psalm, and she would repeat it in her head again and again. And she said to me, Pete, you couldn't be there with me. No one could be in there with me, but I did know the presence of God with me in the MRI scanner. And so if you don't get the promised land, but you get the valley of the shadow, The thing that matters most either way is that you have the presence of the Lord, that you know God with you, and He is the most important decision you can possibly make at any time in your life, but especially in a season of transition. So let's step away from the metaphor and just try and get a bit practical. How do you do that? How do you prioritize the presence of God when you're in a season of transition and change? Well, there's this weird thing you'll have noticed in the Bible passage where God says you're on your own, and the response of the people of Israel is to take off their ornaments. It's the weirdest thing. Like, what's that even about? It's kind of like this weird Monty Python moment. What is that? Well, the ornaments would have been jewelry, right? That's bracelets and earrings and all that stuff. And if you go back to Exodus 32, the previous chapter, you find that the people of Israel aren't good when they've got too many ornaments. It was the ornaments, the jewelry that they have melted down and turned into a golden calf. By the way, one of the things I love about that story is I tend to think I struggle with every single temptation known to man, but it literally, I have never, ever struggled with any temptation at all to make any form of golden livestock at all. I'm utterly free. It's anyone else? Totally, completely liberated in this area. It's just glorious, isn't it, to know there's one sin you have conquered. But the people of Israel, they weren't free of this one. They're like, oh, I really just want to make a golden, maybe a little piglet. Or, well, let's do a calf. Whole cow? No, too much, just a calf. Okay, we'll do a calf, you know. Ooh. You know, I'm not overwhelmed with a desire to go and, like, stab elephants at the zoo with plastic forks. I'm free of that. Well, there's a whole bunch of things I'm free of. But they weren't good with that. And so, I know, it's to do with idolatry. I'm not completely stupid. So here's the deal. Their jewelry is, like, risky for them. Now, it can't be completely, like, evil and demonic. God's not like one of those religious Christians who says you can't have any jewelry, because they've got their jewelry again, right? From the whole golden calf thing. They haven't got rid of it all. They clearly have ornaments again. But they know that this is an area in which they are vulnerable. And when you are in a season of transition and seeking to prioritize the presence of God, it may be that there are things that aren't wrong at other times in your life that somehow become wrong in that season. They are things that are not inherently wrong, but they are risky for you as a person. The weird stuff that we worship, it probably isn't golden calves, but it's equally weird, isn't it? The cars that we bow down before, the jobs, the number of followers on social media, just weird stuff we bow down in front of, the stuff that exposes us to that, that's risky for us. We may, in choosing the presence of God, lay that down. Hebrews 12, verse 1, talks exactly about this. And I don't know, maybe the writer of Hebrews was thinking about this passage when he says this, or she. It might have been, the writer of Hebrews might have been a woman. There's some traditions believe it was a woman. I'll just throw that out there and leave that hanging. But Hebrews 12, verse 1, he or she wrote this: let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and run the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus. Our ornaments are the hindrances, the things that stop us running fast towards Jesus. For me, when I'm in a season where God is particularly inviting me to press into His presence, one of the first things that for me is not wrong but can be risky is screens. You know, screens, iPad screens, iPhone screens, television screens. They're not wrong. I'm not saying you shouldn't have that stuff, but they're just like laden with distraction and dopamine hits, you know? And so that can be something that sometimes I have to just lay down for a season in order to prioritize the presence of God. The two most powerful prayer tools any one of you have is an alarm clock in the morning and a remote control device on your TV in the evening. You know, just to somehow wake yourself up in the morning to seek God and switch off the screens to seek God at night. Sometimes we can have relationships that are not wrong, but they are not healthy, that we are called to lay down for a season in order to prioritize the presence of God. If someone is massively cynical and you sense it pulling you down, sometimes, you know, you don't often hear this preached anymore in church, like just let's get out there and be friends with everyone. But, you know, there is a time for saying, do you know what, I'm vulnerable in this area right now. It's not the friendship's wrong, but right now I need to prioritize things that are good for me as I focus on the Lord. I tell you, a real big ornament, hindrance for many of us is busyness. We worship busyness. It's why when people say, how are you? I say, I'm terribly busy. You know, no one ever goes, I haven't done much for the last couple of weeks. I have enormous amounts of free time. I mostly watch Netflix. You know, no one says that. I find especially retired people, they're like, I'm terribly busy. I have to cut the grass and I have a hair appointment this week. You know, we're addicted to busyness. We worship busyness because we think it gives us value. Isn't it interesting? Jesus only had 3 years to save the planet, and he still found time for parties and picnics and fishing trips, which means that Jesus was officially less busy than most ministers today and much more fun. It's true. I'm standing by that one. You know, okay, confession time. I got caught speeding in my motor car. I know. And I was sent for one of those speed awareness courses. Okay, let's have a moment of confession. It's good for the soul. Just if you've ever done a speed awareness course, just raise your hand now. Let's get this off our chest. It's almost the entire church. You thought it was just you, right? Okay, hands down. Slightly more men. So, anyone ever done more than one? Oh, you're head of, what was your title again, Michael? Michael, isn't it head of discipleship? Okay, so, look, I'm not proud of this, but I have done 3 speed awareness courses, and no, in different constabularies, and you can do it that way. And at the last one, they split you into small groups, and you have to share. It's very like a sort of Christian thing. You have to share what was going on at the time when you were caught speeding, right? So everyone's like giving it like, oh, I was racing to my dying wife's bedside and all this sort of stuff. And I thought, oh, no, I'm a Christian. I've got to tell the truth. No one else is. I've got to actually tell the truth. It's so embarrassing. And so it came to me, and I took a deep breath. I said, the honest truth is I have a GPS system. And, like, it always tells me what time I'm going to get to a place. And I just always want to beat that sucker. Even if it's by 1 minute, I'm like, yes, winning at life, you know. I was like, my wife sees me doing it. She goes, it's only a machine. It doesn't know. So I told my fellowship group, you know, my speed. And I thought they would find it remotely funny, but they all just looked at me like, you murderer. I mean, we are so driven, aren't we? We are so, we're driven by machines. We're driven, even when it doesn't matter, we're just driven by life. Do you know, faith moves at the pace of grace. We are not designed to be driven, even by vision. Some people, it's like, you know, oh, we've got to save the world. We've got to win our friends. We've got to beat human trafficking. We've got to fight injustice. We've got to be the best mothers and fathers and husbands and wives and sons and daughters. And it's like these demands upon us. And we're just constantly trying to beat the GPS system. And we're busy, busy, busy. Frederick Buchner, the great writer, said this. He said, the only person who never had a Messiah complex was the Messiah. 3 years to save the world. Fishing trip? Yeah, I don't mind if I do. Let me cook breakfast. Are you not quite busy, you know, saving the world? No, it'd be all right. Busyness can be an enormous distraction, an ornament, a thing that means we get too busy for God to make space for prayer and listening and worship. Someone wrote a poem in tribute to Oscar Romero, the martyred archbishop. It said this: we cannot do everything. There is a sense of liberation in realizing this. We are workers, not master builders. We are ministers, not messiahs. We are prophets of a future, not our own. At times of transition, we are called to put first things first. We, Sammy and I, just after we got married, had a guy came to know Jesus for actually his name's Paul, and he was dealing a lot of drugs at the time, and he came to know Jesus, and then we began to try and get him off drugs, and he ended up needing to move in with Sammy and me because he needed much more support than just, you know, a couple of Bible studies a week and whatever. And so he moved in with Sammy and me, and it was kind of an interesting process. And he was struggling with, like, massive paranoia to do with, you know, some of the consequences of all the drugs he'd been taking. And I remember he thought our cat was, you know, plotting against him for a while, and we assured him that Zippy probably wasn't. She just had a funny look, you know. And we loved Paul, you know, to this day, he's got a front door key. He's part of our family. And, you know, about a few months into this process with Paul, his dad died. And he went back to see his stepmom. And so she said that his dad was a mechanic, a car mechanic. They weren't a wealthy family, but his stepmom said, Paul, would you like to just go upstairs and choose something to remember your father by? And he said, yeah, I'd love that. So he went upstairs. He was up there for quite a while, and eventually he came downstairs, and he had chosen a sweater to remember his dad by. And whenever he wore this sweater, we knew he was having this, like, you know, feeling close to his dad. And so we always used to say, oh, it was so lovely to see you wear the sweater, Paul. And we didn't like to tell him that it looked terrible on him. It was too small for him and effeminate and just looked bad. And then his stepmom came down to visit us, and she was sitting there drinking a cup of tea. And Paul had said to me, do you think it would be a nice idea if I wore the sweater? And I said, oh, that's very thoughtful, yeah. So Paul's upstairs putting the sweater on, and she's there drinking tea. And he comes in wearing this horrible sweater, right? And I'm like, we're thinking this is going to be a moment, you know, like the you know, the cello is going to be playing in minor chords in the background. He comes in the sweater. She takes one look at him and she goes, Paul, what are you doing wearing my sweater? I've been looking for that for months. The idiot had gone to the wrong wardrobe. Ugh. We can all be exactly like that. We derive this false sense of intimacy with the Father through secondhand experiences, vicarious faith, outsourcing our prayer life to godly old ladies, telling other people's stories, the adventures they've gone on, the price that they've paid, the ways they have prioritized the presence of God. And God sees us caught up in this swirl of conferences and books and records and t-shirts. And he goes, it may all be very well, but at what point do we just cut out the middleman and get one-on-one? You and me, simple, alone in a room talking together. When does that actually happen? Or is Christianity one of your ornaments getting in the way of seeking the presence of God? Last story, and we're going to pray for some people. So my mum is Scottish, and So as you can hear from my accent, I grew up in the south of England, but all our family holidays were with all the relatives up in Scotland. And we used to drive up the M1 motorway it just felt like it went on forever when you're a kid. And I remember one time, it was the summertime, we're driving up the M1 to go to see relatives in Scotland, and it was a hot day. We didn't have air conditioning in the car, and so the windows were down. And suddenly we saw fire coming out of the bonnet of the car. My mum pulled over, and we began to realize she'd been driving. There were only four gears in the car, but she'd been doing 70 miles an hour in second gear for, we estimate, at least 20 miles, and hadn't heard the engine going, ah! Because the windows were down. She blew the big end of the car, which basically is the end of the car. And some of you, I suspect, here tonight, your engine is, ah! And the windows are down and you can hardly hear, but you do feel the heat. Sometimes we're just going too far, too fast in the wrong gear. And we blow up eventually. There's a desperate need for transition and change, gear change. Now, I wonder if this weekend actually is a moment of gear change, maybe the start of 2018, a gear change for some of us. The really good news is this: it is possible to go faster with less effort. Just give me a wave, you go, yeah, that sounds good, I'm in for that. It's possible to go faster with less effort through gear change. Sometimes it's a relational repositioning. Sometimes it's an economic one. Sometimes it is geographical. Sometimes it is spiritual. But the realignment within your life that enables you to accelerate, but with less effort. Not to blow up, but to grow up. And so in this encounter with Moses, as he goes into a major gear change moment into the promised land, God puts him through a spiritual realignment, a spiritual gear change. Are you going to prioritize my presence? Are you going to choose me? And he says, yes. So I'd love us just to give an opportunity to pray for one or two people. We're going to push deeper into this chapter on Sunday and look at some of what it teaches us about prayer, which obviously is a major way that we prioritize the presence of God at a time of transition, and around learning, which is another of the themes we'll see in these 18 verses, and one or two others. So we're going to look at different aspects of how we do this. But I just sense right at the start of this weekend, it's good to get our hearts right. It's good for us, especially those of us maybe who we feel like, yeah, we are in a moment of transition. Whatever that looks like for you. As I said earlier, it could be changes at home, and changes in relationships, changes professionally at work, changes in your thinking and your heart and your theology and your relationship with God. It could be this thing that God is, as it were, speaking to you in new ways, and you're trying to learn the new language of God for the new circumstance, the new psychology that you're inhabiting. But I believe there are many people here, this isn't like a, you know, divine revelation thing, it's just likely that in a room of this many people, there'll be people going through significant change. And I do know this, that God says the decisions we make at those moments are disproportionately important, and the most important decision we can make is to prioritize his presence. That is how we know it's going to be okay. And it may be that for some of us tonight, this opportunity to respond for prayer is going to be also about some hindrances that you want to lay down, some ornaments in your life, some things that aren't wrong, but you know they're risky for you, and you're thinking, do you know what? Just for a season, I'm just going to lay those things down in order to prioritize the presence of God. They are distractions. They're not bad, but they're just not God. They may even be good, but they are not God. I'm going to choose God for a while. So let's take a moment. You've heard loads of words. Let's get the band back on. And in a moment, just going to give an opportunity for those who'd like to receive some prayer and to respond to do so. Let's take a moment now, not to focus on me, but just focus on the Lord. What is it he's saying to you? Why did he bring you here this evening? What is his word to you? What is the encouragement or the challenge from the Father to you right now?